The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAA Hour. This is the football show sponsored by AIB. It's myself and Stevie today, just the two of us in the studio. Conan is gone up to Derry to the funerals of two great Derry men, Ryan McBride and Martin McGuinness. So he'll be very busy up there today. So we're just going to soldier on without him, Stevie.
No problem.
Martin McGuinness, it was actually, now that I mentioned it, me and you did a charity cycle with Martin McGuinness before, up at Joe Brawley's Up for Life. He was there.
That's right, yeah, that was about 3 or 4 years ago now, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I'll never forget it. Joe introduced me to him. He had no idea who I was at all, and it was me, you, I don't think you had been...
The two McEntees.
Yeah. And he just said, how are you getting on to me? And then... Tony, John, how are you getting?
So swiftly moved across.
Swiftly walked straight past me.
To be fair to Martin, he would have been a huge follower of GAA, but particularly in Ulster,
yeah,
and Ulster football. So he would have seen many of our games down through the years, and he would have recognised, obviously, the Gays and myself, and we would have met him fairly often after games as well.
Yeah, he was a big GAA fan. Just on that, you were very good at the cycling that day, actually. Are you still cycling? You had all the gear, you had the proper racing bike. I think I was on a mountain bike for 50 kilometres.
No, I looked like a cyclist. I came prepared, you know, but I certainly wasn't good at it. I remember actually a number of years ago we'd done a charity cycle from Cleavey to Croke Park, and the following day we went back from Croke Park to Cleavey, and I thought I was in mid championship, so I was in pretty good condition and I thought I was flying. We were coming up a hill coming out of Drogheda. I was about 100 yards ahead of everybody else and I thought this is brilliant. And me up on standing, cycling away, cycling like mad. Next thing is this man breezes past me sitting down. Well, Stephen, and away on he goes, and I thought, oh, that's it, you know, I'm not a cyclist at all.
Absolutely gone. It's a very difficult fitness. But like, I mean, you know, it's I landed in a pair of Everton shorts and a Nike singlet, and Paul Kimmage was there, and he just the look of disgust on his face.
I remember looking at you and the attire you were, and I was saying, there is no way that man's going to be physically able to compete. Yeah, this.
I think Kimmage wanted to kick the shit out of me just for what I was wearing.
Yeah, and rightly so, especially when you're wearing the Everton shorts.
Right, Kevin Feely's on the show today, Stevie. Back, he's a really interesting story. He won a county title in 2011 with a tie. Then he got signed. He was playing with Bohemians at the time, playing both. Then he got signed for Charlton. Everton were interested in him. Would have been a dream move to go to the big club on Merseyside. But then it didn't work out for him at Charlton. He played with the under-21s, wasn't in the senior manager's plans, then went out on a 28-day loan to Carlisle, then was shipped off to Wimbledon, ended up in League 2 with Newport, played well there. His heart was never in it because during the time he was over there, Kildare won an under-21 Leinster title without him. That kind of hurt him a little bit, so he ended up coming home, regular feature at midfield for Kildare now, and they're top of Division 2, so it'll be interesting to hear from him.
Yeah, absolutely, great story. You know, for a young fella to go over and experience the professional game is fantastic, and I'm sure he's brought, you know, his learnings and what he's got from the last couple of years back to the Kildare setup, and it's no coincidence that he's performing quite well in midfield for them, hitting their frees as well off the ground, and you know, they're sitting at the top of the table. So you know, Kildare, a county like Kildare certainly needs all the quality that they can get, and obviously he's one of the best.
Yeah, because Kildare are going really well by the looks of things in the league this year. And some news that's just breaking there in the last while is Air Sport are going to show 30 club games. So they're going to show early round. This is starting from May the 7th next year. So they're going to show early rounds of the county championships. They're going to show county finals, and they're going to show the latter stages of the club championship. Now, like, I mean, straight away, I'm thinking, what? That's brilliant news, because there's no talk of exclusivity. TG4 most likely will keep their games. Yeah. I'm pretty sure of that. I'm actually 100% sure of that. And so we're going to see 30 extra club games, and we're going to see more county championship games. And this is what we all want. I think this is absolutely brilliant news. Ayr's coverage is excellent.
Yeah.
Some people will whinge that it's behind a paywall. But again, like their league coverage, they're showing games that wouldn't already be shown. They're showing extra games.
Yeah.
So the people now that will whinge about the paywall, you're not seeing them now.
Yeah.
And you won't see them then. So your life hasn't changed at all.
Yeah,
it's just
exactly,
people,
yeah.
Some people will see more.
And isn't it brilliant that, you know, the regular club players getting an opportunity to show their talents in front of an audience as well? And, you know, any opportunity that we can get to, promote our game, promote particularly club football, is fantastic. And, you know, you have to applaud our sport for you know, looking that far and coming up with this concept.
And applaud Ayr Sport as well for coming in. And, like, I mean, we talk about, they're not the most high profile games, and we talked when the CPA and restructuring the championship and making a big deal about the provincial club championships, because they capture the imagination of the whole country.
Yeah.
Everybody watches them on TG4. I can't understand the bloody commentary, but, you know, to bring in extra profile onto those games, that's going to lift them to a new level. You know, club players get more exposure. The CPA are in now, and suddenly the club man's life is not like the motivation to be a club player now, that a county game and the Armagh County final, Armagh County semi-final, you know, could be on TV. It's a lovely boost for club players who might never be on TV.
Absolutely, and it gives club players a talking point and a focal point this week when they're training together and saying, you know, wouldn't it be great to have the opportunity to perform in front of a TV audience, you know, and in the first round or second round or whatever round it may be. But, you know, there's clubs going to be shown in front of viewers next year that wouldn't necessarily be shown every other year unless they get to a county final. So it's a great opportunity for club players. And, you know, having been involved in the club scene back over the last couple of years on a management and coaching point of view, there's some fantastic talent out there, and it'll be brilliant for those players to be able to show what they're able to do.
It will, and especially immediately what jumps to mind to me is the Dublin Club Championship, because in the early rounds you see games like Ballyboden playing Kilmacud, a local derby, and we never get to see that, and that's a brilliant game to watch. You might see Bridges play Plunkett's, another derby, and the early rounds, especially the Dublin Club Championship, because it's so bloody, the standard is so high that there's six or seven teams in that county that could win an All-Ireland club.
Yeah,
so we're missing out on really good games, and now we might get to see those games.
Absolutely, but I would like to think that Ayr will broaden the horizon and travel the length and breadth of the country as well.
Yeah,
you know, I'll only speak about my own county. You know, we're often asked the question, why have Cross McLean been so dominant in the country and at All-Ireland stage and a county level over the last 20 years? The fact of the matter is, their toughest games have probably been in Armagh, and if some of those games were on view, people would see that and realise that there. And, you know, I would love to see Antrim club games, Carlow club games, Tipperary club games, to see what's out there.
There's an appetite out there, I don't think there's any doubt about that. So well done to Ayr for showing them to us. Bernie Rock has been in the papers, Stevie, during the week, and he's been talking about his son Dean's free take, and says he's a much better player, or a much better free taker than he was, which is fair enough. Dean Rock is an absolutely sensational free taker. I think his percentage last year in the championship was outrageous until the replay, which wasn't as good. But he was talking about this, and this is pure father stuff, you know, because fathers just do player cam on their own son a lot of the time.
Exactly.
But he was saying, to me, he probably doesn't shoot enough, but that's the way. Listen, if there's someone in a better spot, he'll give it to them. And it just got me thinking, Dean Rock probably doesn't shoot enough. There is an awful selfless part of his game. And his game has developed so much now that he's undroppable in that forward line, because there was a debate maybe 2 years ago as when does Dean Rock get on that forward line. Now he's a certainty. He brings a calmness to the forward line. He never messes the ball up. He never makes mistakes. And maybe his father is right. Maybe he should start taking that level now, where I'm the main man on this inside forward line. Get the ball to me. I'm going to shoot, because he's incredibly accurate.
Well, Dean Rock has become one of the highest performers in the Dublin team over the last couple of years, and I would imagine that Dean thinks a lot about his own game and doesn't want to become too predictable, so a lot of the time offloads the ball, sometimes he shoots. He wants to make the defenders that are marking him think a little bit more, and you know, if he starts shooting more often, you know, that's fairly easy for a defender to mark and counteract that there. But I would say Dean's the type of player that, you know, thinks long and hard about his game and what he wants to bring to each match, and he doesn't want to be seen as the unselfish player, so he wants to bring his teammates in, and there's plenty of quality in the Dublin team as well that he can afford to do.
He probably doesn't get enough credit for his general play now, because
he's a fantastic player,
isn't he? His
absolutely.
General play is solid, and like if he wins the ball on the 45, you can be sure he's turning and he's giving a good ball in there. And he's not, he is a player, he can play make as well, because he plays in the half forward line a lot more for Ballymun Kickhams. Like he's a proper all rounder in the forward line.
And what he's got over the last couple of years, he's got fairly strong, his upper body has developed tremendously, but the other thing is he's become a real good ball winner, you know, and he's not afraid to go and show for it. Maybe in the past he would have been, you know, on the outskirts of a game and drifting in and out, but more often now he's having a longer lasting influence in each and every match that Dublin are performing in. On his free taking, I would actually rank him as the best free taker in the country at the minute, and what I love about his free taking is he puts the ball on the ground and strikes the ball over the bar. There is so much less that can go wrong when a guy actually has the confidence and belief in his own ability to put the ball on the ground and strike it over the bar. You know, I believe that it's a rule that the GAA have to look into. If somebody's going to be striking a scoreable free, maybe look at it, bring back the art of kicking a free off the ground, because it's fantastic. Brian Sheehan's another tremendous free taker, but he's not playing consistently enough now to be called the best.
Yeah, maybe they brought that in to speed up the game, but I suppose the lads off their hands do the same routine now as the fellas off the ground, so that kind of argument. But then again, where do you draw the line?
Yeah,
you know,
it's
a difficult one,
because
Dean Rock takes the odd one off his hands.
Yeah, but it all depends on the conditions as well, and you know, so much more can go wrong when you're taking a free from your hands. Your whole upper body movement is different, and you know, while you practice and try to make it perfect, you know, when you're striking a ball from a stationary position, you know, a lot less can go wrong. And you know, I would say if players were told that every chance that you have for a scoreable free, if you're actually making a realistic effort to kick the ball over the bar, it must be struck from the ground. I don't think that's going to slow the game down whatsoever. Yes, if he opts to take the free out of his hands, then it must go short.
Yeah, okay. I agree. There's a lot of traditionalists on this podcast. Paul Early's been in the papers as well, Stevie. You might like this one. He's been talking about more offences that warrant a black card, not less, not like we have enough. He wants some more, so he wants to see all jersey tugging and pulling back being subject to black cards, rather than specifically pulling down an opponent deliberately. It would add some consistency to the current situation. Now, in my opinion, referees have too much to think about with a black card. I think it needs to be simplified down to deliberate professional foul, as in you're under no doubt that this is a deliberate professional foul to stop a goal scoring opportunity or to stop a counter attack.
Yeah.
Anything outside that, referees are getting too clever. Now, don't start bringing in pulling jerseys. You're allowed pulling jersey. You're given a free. That's a punishment enough. We'll end up with nobody on the field if you want.
Well, you've only got one pair of eyes officiating in the middle of the pitch, and you know, if it was a case of pulling the jersey, you know, I think cornerbacks throughout the country would be sent off for the black card more often than not. But I think what they have to realistically look at in the near future is the chance of, you know, helping out the referee a wee bit more, and maybe having two referees on the pitch, one covering one end of the field and another covering the other end of the field, because there's too much going on, too much happening in especially you know, high end matches coming the later stages of the championship, and there's, you know, there's errors being made, and it's no fault of the referees. You have to understand that they've got a difficult job as it is, but certainly I believe that they need some help, and they need some help very fast, because the game is, there's that many rule changes that one referee can't possibly man now, a particular match.
Yeah, but Paul Early actually has that same opinion, that you need two referees. And like, I mean, I don't think you need two referees. I think you need to give umpires and linesmen more responsibility. Like, I mean, you have got, like, and I don't know, from playing on the full forward line, and I've played on the full back line, cornerback. And if you have two lines, you have two umpires behind you, and you want to get up to a bit of naughtiness, you have to check behind you, you have to see what's going on. They rarely put up their hand and help out a forward. And like, I mean, unless they start up in their game, I agree the referee needs help. He has help. They're not giving him help. And that's the big, and the idea that umpires are the mate of the referee, and they could be their father-in-law or something. Like, I mean, no.
And that's a fault. That's where I believe umpires should actually be referees.
Yeah.
You know,
trainee referees or something like
exactly,
that.
Exactly. Because they have more of an understanding of the rules. Like, what we see more times than not is an actual forward being sent off for
retaliation.
Yeah. You know, but it's never, you very rarely see an umpire hold his hand up because, the defender is nipping or pulling or dragging or in the ear.
Never do.
Of one of
did,
his
did actually smile at you when
exactly,
you go to
exactly.
Him.
And when like you've been in the situation, I've been in the situation where I've turned around to umpires and I says, are you not going to offer any protection? And they absolutely say nothing. But as soon as you retaliate in some shape or form, they're not too long in pulling you on it. Yeah. So, you know, it's
that's the culture of umpires. And they're all, the consistency of umpires is very, very rare. It happened to me once in a Leinster final with John Keane. Now, I had to haunt him over this because he was pulling my jersey. I had to haunt him and after about 15 minutes, one of them put up their hand and he got a yellow card. And I went, you're in trouble now. He still he still got the better of me. But I mean, I was like delighted with that umpire for at least being a bit proactive. Now, I had to tell him, I shouldn't have to tell him. But like the idea of two referees when there's already that many eyes on the game. Yeah. You know, I don't know resource-wise whether we should be going down that road.
I would actually love to see the stats of players sent off in games because I would imagine that the stats for midfielders and forwards would be a lot higher than what would be for defenders and goalkeepers. Yet, if you touch a defender or goalkeeper, you know, it frees our award.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. We've talked about this for so long and nothing seems to be changing. But he did also say that he wants to bring the limit of, at the moment it's 3 black cards in a season, you get a suspension. He wants to bring that down to 2, and I agree with that.
I would agree with that as well, yeah.
Because, you know, Kieran Kilkenny the other night, like, I mean, there's no deterrent to do what Kieran Kilkenny did. He didn't drag David Moran down, he stopped him, he dragged him around by the shoulders, he stopped the counter attack, which was at a really crucial part of the game. He knew he was going to get a black. He goes off. The referee giving him the black slowed the whole game down. David Moran couldn't even take the free quick because he's actually dealing with Kieran Kilkenny. Yeah. The referee should have ignored Kieran Kilkenny there and just waved play on. Mm-hmm. I mean, that just played into Kieran Kilkenny's hands. He went off the field. Sure, he's practically kind of smiling, you know, but he knows exactly what he's after doing, and his teammates will love him for it, exactly. And the Dublin fans will love him for it. I'm not blaming Kieran Kelly. I'm blaming that there's no deterrent to do something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, if the level of black cards is reduced to 2 and then you're suspended, then
that might put it out.
It certainly puts it out in the player's head, but Kieran Kilkenny this week knows that he's going to be lining out for Dublin again.
That's it, yeah. So
he had nothing to lose last week by doing what he'd done, and it's perfectly within the rules to do what he'd done last week because he knows that he's not going to get a suspension.
And even just watching that, it's very frustrating watching that, you know, as in, like, imagine that's as a neutral. Imagine watching it as a Kerry supporter and you're saying, go on, Moran, and suddenly he's just been, and that whole counter-attack is gone.
It would drive you, absolutely.
It would. And that's probably what the black card was brought in to prevent, and it doesn't seem to be having that effect. We've another couple of great on a Thursday. We've loads of news to talk about here, Stevie. Conor Callaghan, right? Wins an All Ireland club for Coola on Friday. Back in action last night for the Dublin Under 21s. They beat Longford 2-10 to 9 points. Con only scored 2-5. One of his goals was a drop kick. The other goal, he rounded the goalkeeper and tapped it into an empty net. He scores 5 points on top of that, 5 days after winning an All Ireland club. The idea that Dublin, that football and dominance is all cyclical and it's all going to turn around. Mm-hmm. Bernard Brogan's heading towards retirement. Conor Callaghan's going to come in and take his place. They have a conveyor belt that's coming all
absolutely.
The time. Can't wait to see Conor Callaghan featuring for Dublin seniors. I love watching him hurling. He's brave. He's got a bit about him for such a young age. So if he's going drop kicking goals and stuff like this at under 21,
having the bravery to drop kick a goal in a championship match, but maybe that comes with the confidence of winning an All Ireland medal like you won last week as well.
Yeah, no, listen, it's going to be great to see him. And the idea that it's cyclical is a weird one. Before we move on to Kevin Feely, I want to talk to you about the ladies' game on Saturday night. And Mayo are playing Dublin in Croke Park before Dublin play Roscommon. And to me, this is an absolute no-brainer. Like, I mean, without that game, there's nothing on before the men's game.
Yeah.
So give the women's game the profile that at least for the last 20 minutes of the game, there'll be a good crowd in there and they can watch it and they can decide themselves, you know, this is something I want to follow or this is something, you know, that I'm really interested in. And it just struck me reading it, why, like, Laois will play Longford on Saturday night. There'll be no game before that.
Yeah.
It's a missed opportunity not to play the women's league games before all the men's games. Now, I'm not suggesting...
Before National League games.
Before National League. Yeah. I'm not suggesting at all to do it in the championship because that's the minors. I have won an All-Ireland minor, and to take that off me before the senior game, absolutely not. But like for the league games, you know, because most league games now, the league has took on such an importance in every county.
Yeah.
You'll have a good crowd for your home league games and play the women's game before that and give it the boost that, you know, that
absolutely.
It deserves.
And I may be corrected in this, but I think it could be the first league match being played in Croke Park.
It is, yeah. It is, yeah.
For ladies football. And you've got two of the highest profile teams in ladies football participating in the game. So why not put it on in Croke Park? I think it's a great move and a great opportunity for supporters of Roscommon and supporters of Dublin to get in there early and watch the ladies game as well. And, you know, every supporter always wants to go and see what Dublin are doing at senior level. So it gives the Mayo crowd contingent an opportunity to go and watch the Dublin senior footballers and try to get some learnings from it as well.
And Cora Staunton, I was reading the stat, who's a scoring machine, as we all know.
Yeah.
She hadn't played in Croke Park since 2008 because, you know, Mayo aren't making it. Back in 2008, the early noughties, Mayo were a superpower, and maybe they've slipped off that a little bit. So, you know, to see her in Croke Park, she's heading towards the end of her career, it'll be great as well. And
absolutely.
If you want to get in there early and you want to see a scoring machine,
you can almost be guaranteed that she's going to kick 10 points. And there's no doubt she is the greatest ladies footballer of all time.
Yeah.
And
Sue Ramsbottom now might be up there with her.
I would still say Cora. You know, and for her not to have played in Croke Park in 9 years, you know, it's almost unbelievable to hear that, actually.
Yeah, no, it is. But listen, we may leave it there because Kevin Feely is on the line now. Kildare's Kevin Feely. Kevin, Kildare were in Division 3 when you joined the panel, when you came back from England. Now they're top of Division 2. Is that just a coincidence?
No, I don't know about that. There was a few changes when I came back. Probably more to do with the change of management than anything else. But I don't know, it's been great coming back into it. Like, it was probably, you know, the main reason that I came back from England was for football. Like, you know, I kind of, at the time, I put it down to wanting to finish my, you know, college degree and stuff like that. But, you know, the truth of it was, I was missing out on playing with Kildare. Like, missed out on the 21s Leinster Championship, missed out on club championship with the Italians. You know, that was the kind of real pulling factor behind coming back from England. So, you know, it's been a good couple of years, and, you know, hopefully it continues. But, you know, I've really enjoyed it at the moment, anyway.
Yeah, no, and you know, you went to England in 2012. Atai had won a county title in 2011, and I saw you mention, you referenced that under 21 with Kildare missing out on that. Was that on your mind all the time when you were playing over in England?
To be honest, it probably was. Yeah, like while it was happening, like, I was following it so closely. And, you know, I probably at the time things weren't going great with Charlton while all that was going on. So I do remember that time just being tough, like, seeing how well the boys were doing, and even just seeing how close they were to beating Galway in the All-Ireland semi-final as well, and just kind of realising, geez, I could have been maybe making a difference there. But that was just probably more to do with how things were going at Charlton at the time, because, you know, my opinion changed again. Then when I went on to Newport, I started enjoying my soccer again for a little while. But no, it was definitely tough seeing the lads do so well and knowing that I was missing out on it.
Yeah, talk to us about getting signed for Charlton, Kevin, because you came to my attention because I'm a big Everton fan, and Everton were interested in you at the time, and I started reading up about you thinking you were going to be an Everton player. So, like, there was big Premier League teams in for you. You ended up signing for Charlton. And, you know, it didn't work out for you for whatever reasons over there. Any idea why?
There wasn't, like, you know, like, there is a huge luck aspect of it as well, like, at the timing of things and that. But when I went to Charlton, in hindsight, it was probably the wrong decision. Like, I had a couple other options, but, like, one main other option. Like, and I had an option to go to Peterborough, where I would have been, they had no kind of under 21 team. I would have been going straight into first team football. And whereas Charlton, I knew I was going into an under 21 setup, and I kind of thought that, you know, Charlton's a better setup here, more professional club, I'll go there and see how I go. But in hindsight, I ended up just getting stuck in the reserve league, whereas, you know, if I maybe had gone to Peterborough, I would have been straight into first team football. But,
right,
you know, there are things you don't really realise at the time, obviously. But I think at Charlton as well, you know, the first team manager there, he was never really kind of, he's never having me, to be honest. Like, the under 21 manager was the reason I was signed. Like, he kind of persuaded sergeant assigned me, and then he left after my first year. And after that, kind of, I didn't have a huge amount of coaches on my side, if you like.
Okay.
And so, yeah, even at the start of my second season, I asked for a meeting with Chris Cowell, first team manager, just to see kind of where I was, because I thought I was after having a good first season with the 21s. And when I asked him, like, do you know, am I in your plans for the first team? He was kind of saying no. He just basically laid out on the line, like, he was like, no, you're not in the immediate plans. If you can try and get out on loan, then do it. And so that kind of was a bit of a setback, but at least I knew where I stood, like, so.
Yeah, you appreciate.
And that was kind of, yeah, it was, that was all happening while Kildare 21s were going well as well, so. It was good to know where he stood, like, and I was able to, you know, get out on loan and give it another shot somewhere else, but it was probably an opportunity missed as well.
So that must have been a lonely time then, when you're getting this news, you're over in England on your own, and, you know, Kildare are doing well at home, Attie are, you know, a good solid senior team. Like, is there a big element of homesickness then?
Yeah, there was a good bit of homesickness at Charlton anyway. I found London to be, like, I didn't hugely enjoy London now. Like, I made some good friends. Like, I was living with three or four lads who were kind of in the same boat, a couple of lads, a lad from Newcastle, a lad from different parts of England who were kind of, you know, equally far away from home. So it wasn't too bad in that aspect. But it was more the soccer side of things that I wasn't enjoying than homesickness. So I didn't suffer hugely from it. And even then, like, moving to Newport, which is kind of 10 minutes outside Cardiff, I found that, like, much more similar to home. I kind of enjoyed that a lot more than I did London, to be honest.
Right, okay. And before you went to Newport, you went to Carlisle on 28-day loan, and you went on a short-term loan to Wimbledon as well. How difficult is that, right? You're going for 28 days, it's a new dressing room. Like, it's almost impossible to hit the ground running in a new environment like that.
Oh, the Carlisle was cat. Like, it was so hard. Because I went in there when they were bottom of the league. Their manager was on the verge of being sacked, and I had no first team experience playing in English football, so right. That was an experience early best forgotten about, because one or two games went by and the manager was sacked, and then basically that was the end of the loan, and I was back to Charlton training with the reserves again. So that was a poor enough time now. And then for Wimbledon, I got injured in my first training session and the loan was cancelled, like, so it wasn't until I went to Newport that things kind of, I went on loan to them at the end of my last season with Charlton for 11 or 12 games, and that's kind of where things properly kicked off, like a year and a half after going over.
Yeah, you started getting a regular run. What's a professional soccer team dressing room like in comparison to a GAA dressing room? Are there a lot of similarities, or is there a lot more money talk, for example, in the soccer one, or is that, you know, just too simple a way of thinking about it?
That's probably a little bit simple, yeah, but no, it's very different. Like, the cultures are hugely different, like, especially Charlton. There was, like you said, there's a lot more money in those dressing rooms, and there's a bit more emphasis on it, and there's a bit more emphasis on fashion, accessories and such, whereas it's probably not, there's not a huge amount of that emphasis put in Gaelic dressing rooms, that's for sure. But no, there's definitely a big difference in the extras, but as you go down the leagues, like, League 2 was a much more down-to-earth kind of dressing room. Like, I enjoyed that far more, found it far more similar to, you know, teams that I played with at home, and I reckon it's just a case of, you know, like, as the less money that's involved in the game, the more down-to-earth the dressing rooms are. And,
yeah.
I suppose there's a huge difference anyway between what you're getting in Charlton and what you're getting in Kildare dressing room, for example.
Well, that's it. And I suppose the obsession with Charlton would be maybe one day making the Premier League and maybe playing for yourself to get noticed and all that type of thing. Maybe that dynamic might happen a bit more.
Yeah, you're spot on there. Like, it's very hard. I think managers struggle to get a kind of a togetherness in a dressing room in the Championship. Like, it's like you said, guys are playing for themselves. Like, there's not a whole lot of loyalty in the game at that level. Like, just very rare you come across fellas who are at clubs for more than 3 or 4 years. Like, so
yeah,
you know, that's where there's a huge difference between football and soccer. Like, obviously football is all about pride in your county and your parish and stuff like that, so that kind of team togetherness comes automatically nearly.
Yeah, yeah, it does. What about fitness levels, preparation levels? Because the big debate in Ireland and GAA is that it's nearly at an unsustainable level of professionalism, trying to do all this recovery and all this tactical sessions outside of your working hours. You know, are GAA teams almost at this level of preparation, or are they miles off?
In my opinion, they are, yeah, 100%. Like, they're trying to do something that's not really feasible, in my opinion, with the level of professionalism. In terms of like fitness levels and stuff like that, you know, there's very little difference there between professional soccer players anyway and Gaelic players. The only difference I found was that, you know, soccer pre-seasons would be an awful lot harder, and then throughout the season, then the training would be kind of really low intensity while all the games are going on.
Yeah.
Whereas it seems like in football, there's four pre-seasons and training intensity rarely drops, and it's very hard. I don't know how players manage it. Like, in fairness, I think Kildare are very good at managing that. Like, there's a good medical team there kind of controlling the GPS that players are doing and stuff, and it's starting to change. But you know, that was the biggest difference I noticed, is that the intensity seems to stay fairly constantly high in GAA training, whereas in soccer, no, they work hard for pre-season, and then while all the matches are going on, the intensity of training drops right down.
Yeah, well, I suppose they have games every week, which kind of helps. We have games every 3 weeks or 4 weeks in the Championship. Because Stephen Hunt wrote a piece last week in The Independent, and he talked about the difference between professional soccer and GAA, as in there's an awful lot of boredom involved with professional soccer, in that they put a huge emphasis on recovery. So you find yourself after training recovering a lot and sitting on the couch. And like, he got it, there was a huge reaction from the GAA community saying, Jesus, it must be very easy to sit on the couch. What are you complaining about? But I suppose being forced to recover and being forced to sit on your couch all week might get that little bit boring after a while.
Yeah, I suppose that depends on the individual. Like, I don't think every professional soccer player would be, I suppose, recovering in the same way. Like, you don't have to sit in your couch, or you don't have to go to sleep when you come home from training. You know, you're kind of free to do what you want with your time once you get home from training at 3 o'clock or whatever it is. But I do think that the recovery side of things is the biggest difference between the two sports. Like there's literally no real time for any recovery in GAA, I suppose. And I think that's why there's such a high injury rate, to be honest, because of the intensity of training, which it doesn't kind of correlate to the amount of recovery time you get. But in terms of boredom, I don't know, I it can be boring, but or, you know, you can choose to do what you want at your own time. But I don't know,
yeah,
whether that's like a fair enough reason, if you like.
Yeah, okay. Tell us about settling back in then to GAA when you came home. At what point did you kind of come to terms with the fact that the dream in England is gone, and then, you know, you're able to fully focus on the GAA?
I'd say the summer before I came back, to be honest, every summer I came home, I contemplated staying home, and then I just kind of bit the bullet and just said, here, I need to do what makes me happy. And I started the season with Newport in 2015-2016 season, knowing that I was going to be going home anyway, which was kind of a bad, because I needed to save up a bit of money to be able to afford to go back to college. So that was kind of my main reason for going back,
right,
for the start of the season in 2015. But I think that summer I kind of made the decision that I was coming home, and I started to put the plans in place for going back to college, and got onto a tie, and, you know, I kind of was in touch with Jason Ryan at the time, and, you know, plans were kind of being put in place for when I was coming home. And I suppose it was that summer that I really kind of accepted that this is what I want to do, and, you know, the professional soccer maybe isn't just for me.
Yeah, was it difficult to accept that? I suppose when the likes of Everton and these teams are knocking on your doors, it's very easy for your mind to wonder, you know, about being a Premier League soccer player and things like that.
Yeah, it was very difficult to accept it. Like, it was that difficult that it took the best part of 2 years to fully accept it. I was kind of, I was in denial about wanting to give up, because I was thinking, like, you know, I haven't been given a fair chance here. Keep at it, and your mind will change. You'll start to enjoy it more. But, you know, even after playing a full season with Newport, I knew after that, like, things were going well on the pitch, and I still wanted to go home. You know, kind of.
Right.
So I knew after having given it a shot reasonably well, but my heart was still wanting to come home, kind of, like, I knew kind of then that it was, you know, this is the right thing for me to do.
Right, okay. Talk to us about Kildare this year then, Kevin, because you're top scorers in Division 2. You've the second best defence. You know, you're playing really good free-flowing football. What's changed this year? Because you're coming off a pretty disappointing championship.
Yeah, it was disappointing enough. It was Westmeath game in particular. You know, we tried to have a change our style of play. We were probably looking ahead, if you like, to potential Leinster final. So we tried to change our style of play to practice that if we were to come up against Dublin, but
yeah,
you know, that didn't work out for us. And in the qualifiers then we gave it a shot and we played some decent football against Offaly and Mayo, so we kind of finished it, you know, not too bad. But this year I suppose the biggest change is we're just learning from previous mistakes. You know, anyway, we're quite a young team and it probably takes a bit of time for a team to develop and learn from their previous mistakes. But I think that's definitely the thing that's been happening that's changed most this year. Like, you know, it's a similar panel of players, but it's just finally, I suppose, hitting home what needs to be done to close out games and just some better decision making and stuff like that. You know, we're just learning from our mistakes, basically.
Yeah, isn't that gas that Dublin have everybody so spooked that you're actually trying to practice something that you might need against them? And it was Westmeath ended up playing against them then because he ended up in a dour contest against Westmeath.
Exactly, yeah, sure, that's right at the moment, isn't it?
Like, yeah.
Their unbeaten streak is ridiculous. So it's fair enough, I think, that they've put that kind of fear into teams. And but I don't know, like, this year there's a lot more teams having to cut at them and doing reasonably well, so, you know, maybe that could be the way forward. But sure, that was just the reasoning behind their style of play last year anyway.
Yeah, you fairly settled team throughout the league. It's pretty obvious that you're targeting Division 2, you know, and maybe getting up into Division 1.
Yeah, like, to be honest, there was no talk of that at the start of the season. It was just taking it game by game, I suppose. But we've been lucky in that the injuries haven't been too bad. Now, Ben McCormick, Neil Flynn was obviously there. The kind of, I suppose, the core of the team has been able to be put out week in, week out. And that was another big difference from last year, where there was a huge amount of injuries and chopping and changing. And, you know, that kind of breeds a bit of consistency. And if you're winning as well, it just kind of confidence starts to build as well. So we've been lucky in that we haven't had too many injuries. And I suppose that's been a kind of key factor as well.
What about yourself? You're settled in midfield with Kildare. You play fullback for DCU in the Sigerson. Where are you most comfortable? You pretty much play anywhere.
The midfield is 100% where I'm most comfortable now. I was truly out of my comfort zone in fullback for DCU, but I got a bit lucky, I suppose, in a couple of them games. But anywhere further back from midfield, I'm trying to see from a midfielder full forward. That was a kind of a strange enough call by DCU to throw me in the back, but
right, that's because you're centre half in soccer, so they reckon, right, there's defensive instincts there somewhere.
You'd be surprised at how often that perception is used. It's ridiculous, but sure, just a perception, I suppose.
Yeah, because you have a good partnership with Mulick in midfield. Like, you both like to get forward, like, you're on the freeze. Just looking at the Mayo Cavan game, there was 112 scored from midfielders. So, like, I mean, there's loads of license for midfielders these days to get forward and kick scores if they want to.
Yeah, there is. I think it's coming down to the styles of play you're coming up against, where, you know, nearly every team's getting huge numbers behind the ball. So the opportunity for midfielders to score is coming from slow attacks and then late runners, if you like. So if you're coming from deep, like, an attack might be taking a while, but if you're coming from deep at pace, you know, there's huge scoring opportunities there for midfielders, and that's probably the reason for it.
Yeah. Just finally, you've avoided Dublin in Leinster. At least that's something until potential Leinster final. Like, same as last year, and you'll obviously learn from the mistakes of last year. Like, realistically, for every county in Leinster, the ambitions has to become the second best team in Leinster, you know, because the idea that you're going to be, you know, the best seems a bit far-fetched. But definitely there's a spot there for regular Leinster finals, regular big games against Dublin in Croke Park. And I suppose that's the ambition for Kildare, for Westmeath, for Laois, for all the other Leinster counties, for Meath as well.
Yeah, I suppose, like, but like, so I think the league this year kind of might reflect a bit more strength coming back into Leinster teams. I don't know, maybe it's just that's just my opinion, but I don't know. I think that'll definitely be most of those teams' targets, is to be reaching Leinster finals anyway, and I think we're in the same boat. But you know, at the same time, there wouldn't be much point in going out at the start of every season if you didn't have realistic ambitions of winning something as well. Like, so I kind of thought, yeah, as much as Dublin are a superpower and that, you still have to have that ambition to want to win. Like, and so, you know, I think no different to those other teams you mentioned, we'll be in that boat as well. Like,
yeah, okay, listen, well, best of luck with it anyways, and thanks very much for taking the call, Kevin.
No water, Colin, thanks. Good luck.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens, yeah. And it does happen, but I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show didn't look great, there was maybe they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out terrible, unlucky to lose, like. Let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure, 50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name.
AIB, backing club and county.
Mayo and Tyrone is an interesting enough one, Stephen, as in the last maybe 15 years, Mayo kind of always had Tyrone's number. When Tyrone were going well, Mayo were able to beat them. They beat them in 2004. They beat them, I think, later on, maybe 07 or... I'm not sure, but they beat the great Tyrone
2006
team.
2006, maybe.
Maybe 6, yeah. More than what any other counties were able to beat that brilliant Tyrone team. And it's weird, this kind of psychological thing. So much of the game is psychological.
Yeah, absolutely. And they also beat them last year in the championship in the quarterfinal. Yeah. So, you know, Mayo certainly always believed that they had the upper hand on Tyrone. You know, if there's one team that causes Tyrone problems, it certainly is Mayo. Is there any particular reason for that? I'm not too sure, you know, because on some of those occasions, Mayo certainly talent-wise wouldn't have been as strong as what Tyrone were, but, you know, were able still to get the result. And it's when we looked at this weekend's accumulator, it was certainly one match that I stayed clear from. You know, while Mayo haven't been performing particularly well throughout the course of this league campaign, this is the type of match that'll spur them on and get them up for, and it wouldn't surprise me one bit if they're actually overturned Tyrone this weekend.
Yeah, they were terrible against Cavan, and we spoke a little bit about this on Monday's show, and about how easily they were hitting the counter-attack. And it was like, Jesus, Mayo, you figured out how to stop the counter-attack against Tyrone last year. You played it tactically very well, and the game wasn't brilliant to watch, but that's the way you have that's what you have to do against these teams. And then you come out at home against Cavan, and it's almost like you didn't show their counter-attack game enough respect.
Yeah.
You went for the juggler. And Stephen Rutgers said after the game, he said, that's the nature of it when you play with against a team with many bodies back the field. When they break out, that's where they run. So you can either decide to play the same game as them, or you can look to try and turn the ball up a bit further up the field. And that's what we're trying to do. Now, I didn't read that too well, but basically, basically he's saying, instead of standing back and watching the counter-attack, they actually did push up. And this is what me and Conan were saying last week. They actually went to try and beat Cavan, even though Cavan had loads of bodies back.
Yeah.
Played right into their hands.
Yeah.
And Cavan were just hitting them on the break. And it's almost proved that does not work.
And it certainly, you know, it reminds me so much of the Armagh defeat a few years ago in Breffni Park when Armagh tried similar tactics by pushing high up on them, and Cavan certainly, you know, sucker punched them a couple of times and caught them on the hop. But
Grimley got slaughtered after
that. He absolutely did get slaughtered, and he took it in the chin. He accepted, you know, responsibility for the defeat. But sometimes you have to play a high strategy game like that there, where you know, if it does break down, you are relying heavily on your players and a high work rate to get them back. But you know, Cavan have players that are capable and of going at speed, and they proved it last weekend. But it's a difficult scenario to be in. You know, the push bodies up, or do you keep them back, or whatever? You know, you put yourself in, maybe you look across McGlen, the most successful club team over the last 20 years. I have no doubt if Cross McGlen were coming up against a team like that, they would push everybody up. You know,
everybody,
almost everybody, yeah. And that's the way they play. They believe in man to man, pushing up. You know, don't give your opponent an opportunity.
You see what you're doing there, though. Like, I mean, by pushing everybody up, all you're succeeding in doing is actually closing down the
space. Exactly, yeah.
And when it's because you're closing down the space up there, there's a higher percentage chance you're going to get turned over. And then when you're turned over, you're bloody scrambling, running the wrong way back towards your own goals, and they're facing your goals, and you're kind of gone.
Yeah, well, the key to it is when you win the ball is, you know, you can start to drift the ball further out the pitch again to try to create a wee bit more space for yourself as well. And if you're doing that there, then your opponents automatically have to push out on you. So,
yeah,
you know, Cross McGlen certainly played well. They are very cool under pressure. They have a lot of patience within their ranks, and they believe in the system that they play. So they certainly wait and wait for the right moment and time to get the ball, filter it into the scoring score zone, and get the ball to the right boys who can kick the ball over the bar. Mayo probably don't have the same belief in their own system at the minute, and it could also be a case of Mayo going in last weekend and taking Cavan for granted.
Yeah, maybe you know, it could have been, as in, look, we will try and bar. Maybe they were trying something out, you know, because that's what the league is for.
Exactly.
It's like, look, we tried this out against Tyrone last year, we'll try something else against Cavan. I think they've proved to themselves that that's not working. But just on that, I think Dublin is a great example of a team who have it down to a T now against defensive teams. They leave two fellas outside that defensive shield all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They've leave two lads out wide left and wide right. So they've got four lads on the outside all the time.
Yeah.
So they'll try and punch a hole. If they get wrapped up, they've got an out ball.
Back,
they'll come back out to these
four
lads again. Then they'll head off to the other side of the field. They'll try and get through that side. But they always have, when you're bottled up in there, or that doesn't seem to be working, they've the option to throw it back out to the lads that are waiting. And what's always already beautiful, also beautiful about the lads that are outside waiting, is that if these lads are turned over inside, they have a shield outside to stop the counterattack. You have to be conservative about that and have an out, because
Absolutely. They
want you to be in there, and they want you to be turned over, and they want to break, and they don't want anybody to stop that break.
But remember, Dublin learnt a hard lesson playing against Donegal a number of years ago. So
no team should be learning these lessons anymore, Stevie. This is going on, isn't it, for long enough now to know, right, I'm playing Cavan. Don't be stupid here.
Yeah,
you know, Lee Keegan kicked two brilliant points in the second half. But Lee, I don't want you kicking 2 points, because if, like, the percentage chance of you kicking those brilliant scores, and there were two brilliant scores, like, I mean, if you're getting turned over there, we've no shield there.
Yeah.
You're the centre half back today. You know, that kind of way. So there's no secret about how a lot of these teams play.
No, there's
now.
No secret, but it goes back to the point that on any given day, any team can beat each other. And that's it. Yeah, well, yes, Dublin are the benchmark and the best team. But we've already had a couple of teams who run them close this year. Well, three teams. Tyrone, Kerry and Donegal.
Yeah.
So, you know, our team's catching on to Dublin's way of playing. Are they starting to realise that we can compete and can maybe beat them? And, you know, it's a case of going out and having that total belief that on any given day, regardless of your opponent, you can actually go and beat them.
Yeah, and even as Kevin Feely said there, that it's starting to shift away with Dublin, that going really defensive against them isn't really working, that maybe actually attacking their full back line and not allowing Keane O'Sullivan the free roll, and maybe the shift might go towards with Dublin now, not with Tyrone probably or Donegal, because they have their set way of playing all the time.
Yeah.
But with teams like Kerry and Mayo, like, I mean, try and go for Dublin, like, you know, I mean, that's, I think that's maybe the way forward for them. But Seamus and Aidan O'Shea are back in contention for Mayo. Yeah. It's about time, really, for Mayo. They need some help in there because, like, I mean, their best scoring forward is Andy Moore, and he got 3 from play against Kerry and against Cavan. And, like, every year they're talking about Andy retiring, but there's no sign of Andy retiring. He's flying.
Well, they can't afford to have him retire at the minute because I think the stats from Killian O'Connor is that he scored 5 points from play throughout the course of the National League so far. And that's a poor return for a player of his ability.
He's centre forward now.
Yeah, I know he's playing further out, but you still expect a player of his ability to realise that he is the main scoring threat. He's the main scorer. Yes, he's out to pull the strings a bit more, but he should be, you know, focusing more on getting on the end of plays as well as maybe, I suppose, setting players up and pulling the strings.
Yeah, Tyrone have only scored 1 goal in 5 games. Now, they've only conceded 2 in the league so far. Mayo have only scored 1 goal in 5 games as well. And, like, did you ever do specific work on getting goals? Like, I know your tactics were very obvious when you were playing with Armagh. Like, I mean, you know, long ball to Ronan and you're feeding off it. And, like, you got so many good scores off that.
Can I also say that Ronan fed off me sometimes?
The odd time now, very, very rarely. If we're talking percentages, we're talking 80-20 here. Yeah. But, like, did you actually say, here, lads, we want to get goals, this is what we're going to do for goals? Because I don't specifically remember us with Leash actually going, this is what we want to do to get goals. You know, yeah, goals just came, you know that kind
of... We always tried to target at least a goal per game. So we did, and by doing that there, you know, it was a simple tactic, fairly simple. We believed in the players that we had playing in the inside line, but we also believed in our half forward line coming and supporting those players. When you've got the likes of Paddy McKeever, Oshie McConville and John McEntee coming from deep, there's 3 players straight off that have the ability to score goals. So, you know, for us it was quite simple. Once the ball hit midfield, get it into the full forward line, into the danger zone as quick and as often as possible. And, you know, we didn't care by playing inside how that ball came in. We would prefer an 80-20 in favour of the defender. As long as the ball was coming into us, for one, you know, our opponents, if they won the ball, they had further to go to get a score. The other thing is that we always believed that we had the fighting ability to grapple with them and to get the ball anyway. And if we got the ball in there 9 times out of 10, you know, one of those opportunities might result in a goal chance. And, you know, we had belief in the players that we had, that if we were presented with a goal chance, that it would come.
Yeah.
And it was quite simple. It was it's a very simple philosophy, but very effective. If you got ball winners inside, get it in there as quick and as often as possible, and, you know, you definitely do target at least 1 goal per game.
Yeah, but I suppose targeting one is one thing, and then did you ever go through a goal drought and have to start discussing why are we not getting goals and things like that? Or
I can't really remember. I don't think, you know, I think we are consistently good at scoring goals, that particular team that I played on, so it wasn't something that we spoke about. In 2003, in our lead up to the All-Ireland final, we actually only conceded 1 goal. We had a very tight defence, and there was plenty of meetings and discussions with our defence and the goalkeepers on our defensive midfielders to make sure that, you know, we kept the tight ship at the back and we didn't leak goals. And that's one of the main reasons why we went to the All-Ireland final that year, is because we only actually did concede 1 goal, and it was in the All-Ireland semi-final, a fantastic goal by Christy Tighe for Donegal. But it was the only goal that we conceded in, I think it was 9 championship games that year. So, you know, that's because you know, there was a unity amongst the defence. Each player knew exactly the roles that they were performing, and you know, having the experience of winning an All-Ireland year before give that defence the confidence as well, to make sure that everything at the back was kept limited to our opponents from breaking through and getting goals.
Yeah, and I think with Tyrone as well, because this was an issue with them for last season as well. I know they scored a few against Derry in the Championship, but sure, Derry again played into their hands and just didn't worry about the counter-attack. That Tyrone's system, and we talked about this before, they don't have the plan B, so there's everybody's in no doubt about how Tyrone are going to play. So now they're mirroring them, and Tyrone's counter-attack isn't always working because the other team is leaving back a couple of lads. So Tyrone have to work the ball on the counter-attack to a point and then flick it over, you know, get it over the bar instead of, because they're being outnumbered on their counter-attack, and it just suits their game plan. So maybe it's not a fact that Tyrone aren't trying for goals. It's just their game plan is so obvious, and teams prepare for their obvious game plan that goals are just going to generally be more hard to come by for them.
Yeah, and you know, quite possibly for the guys playing the inside line, it's a frustrating situation to be in, because there's no feeling like a forward grabbing a goal for your team. But I you know, there's going to be some game, and it could come up very soon, where Throne, you know, level off and maybe bag two or three in one particular game. And, you know, in years gone by, Throne were always masters at getting goals at the right time. So I wouldn't be too concerned about that, about Throne not being able to score goals at the minute. You know, even looking at Throne and Mayo this weekend, it wouldn't surprise me one bit if he's seen five or six goals in that particular match.
I know, yeah. But this bloody punditry lark is just go out the window if that happens.
Exactly,
like,
you know.
It's just that we won't know what way to look.
Yeah.
But the big one in Division 4 is the decider of who tops the group. And it's, do you know what? It means very little because both teams are going to be in the final.
Yeah.
So we've seen this, I think it was with Cavan and Roscommon maybe before, and you know, where they're the two top teams and then they play at the end. So we're going to see Wexford and Westmeath playing each other twice, more than likely, in this game. And then in two games time in the league final.
Yeah.
So like, there's nothing between the two teams. You know, Westmeath were my tip early in the year. Wexford are going well. Westmeath are probably that little bit too good for that division. But I kind of like the top two and the league finals in all the divisions. I like the way the league has gone this year, because, like, I mean, if there was a top four, for example, in Division 1, the four are on seven now, it's almost decided.
Yeah, exactly,
you know what
yeah.
I mean? Whereas
yeah.
the top two, that's a tough...
You've got to fight for it, and score difference makes a big...
Yeah, and you deserve your league final
well,
place.
Yeah.
yeah, you deserve your league final
yeah.
place. And, you know, that's why a lot of the divisions are an awful lot more exciting now, because there's only two places up for grabs.
Yeah. If you're in the Wexford or Waterford, or Wexford or Westmeath camp, what would you be looking to do this weekend? Would you be
throw the game?
Would you? I absolutely would.
Would you be playing silly beggars there?
No, absolutely. I'd be looking to lay a marker down and say we are better than yous, and when we play each other again in two games time, we're going to beat yous again. And that's the belief that any team I feel has to have. You know, regardless of if there's not much to play for this weekend, I would still be looking to go out to make a statement.
Right. Okay. Yeah. No. It depends on what way you're looking at it, or what the trajectory maybe of your team.
Yeah.
Like, because both of them will finish in the top two. It depends whether
that will be the case now.
Yeah, because Wexford are definitely true, and like, I mean, if Banty wanted to give a few lads a run now because they've been playing their strongest team right throughout the league, you could kind of understand why he might do that. Whether that's throwing the game or not, it's obviously no one will ever admit that they threw the game.
Yeah, it may well give him a chance to look at a few players, but I don't think he'll change the team that dramatically. I think he'll still stick with most of the tried and trusted, but I would certainly, and I would be surprised if Banty doesn't want to lay a marker down. You know, typical in typical Ulster fashion.
Banty,
you know,
is a marker laying down type of man.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, so I would expect he'd be saying, you know, we get stuck into these Westmeath guys, and if we get a chance to pulverise them in front of goal, that's what we do, and we lay that marker down, because we know in two or three weeks' time we're going to be playing them again, and that'll be at the back of their heads.
Yeah, exactly. All right, up next we'll have a look at some accumulators.
Somebody said it's as ugly as Marty Morrissey or football.
We probably, in fairness, he wouldn't know a penalty if it bit him in the arse. I mean,
like, what is the point of this? They swear allegiance to the cult of Cairn.
But I tell you what, you can forget about Sean Kavanagh as far as he's a man.
Is managing Mead at some stage in for the rest of your life a pebble in your shoe that you want to get out?
No, I think I've got over that.
Have you?
If I went to do that, sure, who'd keep manners on Joe Brawley on the Sunday game? And you couldn't expose the nation to him on his own, could you?
Accumulators time, Stevie, and being the competitors that we are, we're not going to let this unpredictable league shake our confidence. We're going to stick it in till the end. It's very easy to throw in the towel in situations like this, but winners don't throw in the towel.
No, we keep going and we keep fighting till the end, and that's what we'll continue to do.
Yeah, I don't know if
one of these weeks we will get one up.
I don't know if it's courage or stupidity, but we will get it up, right? And you're definitely going to say, when you hear my first bet, is stupidity. Blind stupidity. So you can probably guess who I'm going for. Leash at home to beat Longford at 4-6 on Saturday night. Jesus, Leash's short term future is riding on this, because if Leash lose this at home, they've got Offaly. Imagine Offaly putting us down to Division 4. It would be like the embarrassment of that. So I think, you know, because of what's on the line for Leash, I think there'll be a performance at home against Longford. They play them in the Championship this year, so I think there's markers to be laid
down
there.
Another marker to be laid
down,
exactly.
And if Leash have anything about them, like, I actually genuinely think I'll lose faith all faith if they can't beat Longford at home with what's riding on that game.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for Westmead to beat Wexford away. Westmead have been very kind to me throughout the league. I tipped them to win a couple of games and they haven't let me down. So I'm going to go for Westmead in that one. They're evens. I'm going to go for Tyrone at 4-6 to beat Mayo at home. I think, well, both are coming off bad results, but I think Tyrone and Oma are, you know, they're really, really strong.
Against the team that seem to have the upper hand on them. You're making big calls here.
Well, that's given me those better odds, yeah, to see, Stevie. And yeah, no, Tyrone beat Mayo in the league 2 years ago, 215 to 15 points. So, yeah, like, I mean, league hasn't been a problem. They've been bogey team in the championship. I'm going to go for Galway to beat Down away. I think Galway are flying it. 5 goals against Derry. Just, you know, we talk so much. Like, I've made everybody laughed at me when I said Galway are the ones best equipped to make the best step. Well, okay, I'm actually toned it down there. I said Galway, yeah, are going to win in All-Ireland in the next 3 years, which is a bit out there, but they're definitely well equipped to join that top table of Mayo, Tyrone, Dublin and Kerry, and I think they will definitely in the next 3 years. They're 8-13, so altogether you've got 9-1 there on four results. You've changed tact a little bit this week.
I have, absolutely. Because of the lack of success we've had, I've had to change my approach to this.
Well, like, that's brave. Like, Brendan Rodgers, to give an analogy of your beloved Liverpool, it wasn't working for him. He changed the tactics. He went to a 4-3-3.
Yeah.
He changed their season around. Now it went pear-shaped towards the end again. But look, you're changing your tactics, yeah, and that's to be applauded.
Yeah, I'm changing my tactics. And on any other week, I would be certainly looking at Derry against Cork and I'd be picking Cork, but I'm staying clear from that particular match this week because of, I think there could be a reaction in Derry this week because it's City of Mourning and,
yeah, you know, and the Slotnail lads are back, McCaig and, yeah, Rodgers. Imagine they're two very important
brilliant
positions
players,
yeah, full
players,
back, so centre back,
exactly, and they could react in a positive manner and get a result this weekend.
The one thing I've learned at this league, keep Derry out of your accumulators, and Colin has learned
I am certainly keeping
them
out of it this weekend,
yeah.
So I've actually limited my accumulator this week to 3 teams, but I've gone for the handicaps,
okay,
on all 3. So I've opted for Kerry at -3 to beat Cavan.
Cavan away, right.
Kerry are away. I just believe that they've got too much class and ability to, in comparison to what Cavan have. Yes, Cavan had a great result last week, but I don't think they'll be able to put back-to-back victories like
not,
that again.
Not to burst your enthusiasm, but to back Kerry -3 against the blanket defence team, that's a brave call.
It's a brave call, yeah, but I still believe that Kerry are good enough to go and beat team,
okay,
or beat Cavan. I've gone with a team that you've opted for, Galway, to beat Down, and I've also done Galway at -3. You know, you look, right, at last weekend's result.
So these are all even money minus in the minus, are they?
Almost, right, yeah. So I think maybe 11-10 or whatever.
Okay.
But I think Galway at -3 to beat Down, another team playing away from home, but a team that have a fantastic ability to score goals.
Yeah, so we must ask Kevin Walsh the secret there.
Yeah, exactly. And my last choice for a handicap is a brave one because it's my own county. I've stayed clear from them the last few weeks, but I'm going back to them because they are the biggest scoring team in all four, yeah, divisions at the minute. They're scoring goals for fun, and last week that was even without Andy Mernon and Stephen Campbell playing up front. So I've gone for Armagh to beat Antrim, and I've gone for -5 on this particular one, and quite simply is because I have seen enough of Armagh over the last couple of games to expect a comprehensive victory in this game. So all 3 of them, Kerry -3, Galway -3 and Armagh -5, gets you almost 10-1.
10-1, okay, that's not bad. And Armagh's 2 wing forwards, Grugan, and who was the other one?
Rory Grugan.
9 points from play between,
yeah,
them.
Yeah,
I love seeing
Niall Grimley was the other
Grimley.
One.
Grimley, I, yeah, love seeing scoring wing forwards. Well, I always look out for it.
Not
it's
only
it's
are the scoring
thing.
Wing forwards, but they're creative players and can link play as well. Rory Grugan in particular is the type of player that you would pay in to watch. You know, he can make those defence splitting passes.
See, Oisín's
relation,
is it?
Oisín O'Neill is another player who has yet to come back in. He has been injured for the last couple of weeks, missed the under-21 match last weekend, so he's a massive presence as well, and a player that'll come in and push hard for a place in that half forward line as well. So, you know, it's brilliant to see half forward scoring.
It is.
And Armagh, we spoke about it already. Listen, there's no secret behind it. Armagh's forward line is frighteningly dangerous at the minute.
Yeah, there's a lot of optimism around Armagh, in fairness, and rightly so, when they're racking up those kind of scores. Kildare have scored 11 goals in the league as well. Like, yeah. I mean, you know, they're playing Daryl Flynn at full forward, who's a natural midfielder. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of teams are trying out different things. And you just love to know the secret of why teams are scoring goals. But I genuinely think if you play a blanket defence, you're less likely to score goals because the other team will have men back. And, like, you know, there's no, I don't think there's any secret. Galway are scoring goals, Kildare are scoring goals, Armagh are scoring goals. They're not playing blanket defence. Armagh are trying to get the balance of both.
Yeah, well, you know, having been at a few of the games, Armagh are trying to balance both. It's not that they're not getting numbers back, because they are, but they're working extremely hard for each other, and they realise that once they have the ball, they're pushing high up the field as well.
Yeah, okay. And maybe Division 3 doesn't help the old goal scoring record as well.
No, but you know, at the end of the day, you can only beat what's put in front of you, and Armagh are beating these teams comprehensively.
Yeah, exactly. Right, that's all we have time for this week. We'll be back on Monday with a full review show. And we have a hurling show out today, so make sure you tune in to the hurling show. And we have a Hard Yards podcast with Ron Nogara, so make sure you listen to that in that order. Football show first, hurling show second, Hard Yards third. I'll say the opposite way on the hurling show, but the Hard Yards will be third on that one as well. Okay, look, I'm talking shit here now. See you on Monday.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.